you are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is George Williston. George has written a provocative and profound book called This Tribe of Mine, A Story of Anglo-Saxon Viking Culture in America. He is currently a high school shop teacher in a small farming community in Michigan, in addition to being a professional cabinet maker and woodworker. His interest in the history of Christianity, the nature of Jesus, esoteric Buddhism, Hinduism, Native American writers, and American history are at the core of This Tribe of Mine. It's an inside look at the truth about our checkered history, which touches upon universal truths and ends with an inspirational message about the interconnectedness of all life through spirit and love. He gently opens the door to our spiritual side, sharing information about indigenous shamans, quantum physics, and more. So let's welcome George to the show now. Hi, George. How are you?
Hey, I've been suffering from one of these Midwestern spring colds, but other than that, I'm great.
Well, as long as you can talk.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you that I just can't say enough good things about your book. It was a wonderful, it was disturbing at the beginning, and there's a lot to digest, but there's so much of value and of interest that it's just a must read. That's how I feel about it.
Well, bless you. Bless you.
In fact, I would go so far as to say that it should be taught at the earliest levels of school as mandatory reading.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
I tried to write it so that high school students, could understand. You know, it was not to be too academic.
Yeah, you did a great job on that.
Well, thank you.
Now, so that there's no way that I can convey the complexity of your book, so for the listeners, is there any way you can provide a synopsis to get us started off?
Well, we, as a culture, don't really know the history of our culture, and we're taught that the way we are is the way we should, this is the way we should be and should live, and everybody else who doesn't live that way is not living the correct way. And in finding out in my reading where our culture comes from, Germanic Viking culture, and why we still have Woden's Day and Thor's Day and Tuya's Day in our cycle of culture, that as human beings we're born into culture and patterned into that culture, and we grow up to act out what we are taught as norms. And finding out that my intuition leading me sort of that, you know, there's probably healthier, happier ways to be. There's got to be, than what we're doing here. That's sort of what this story is about, to try to show and compare it to other ways of being. The Anglo-Saxon domination and competition and hoarding as opposed to sharing, and loving, basically. So, does that start it out?
Are you picking up a disturbance on this line? Can you hear that, the static?
I do. I'm on the landline here. I could go to a different phone and see if that works a little bit better.
I can barely hear you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, my stepson's been saying that to me all day. It could be my cold, too.
Let me try this one here.
Is this better?
We'll try it. If Don is paying attention there in the booth,
okay,
we might have to call you back. I don't know what's wrong with the line. It sounds like there's heavy interference. Anyway,
we are talking all the way across, or halfway across North America. But I know in today's technology, that's nothing. Anyways, you know, growing up during Vietnam, when my friends were being sent off to kill commies, we were sort of, some of us, were sort of marked with that on our souls as to there's something wrong here. And that's probably the alienated sense that led me on a search for larger truths. So, many cultures know who they are over a span of 2,000 years. The Germans certainly do. Native Americans do. And we sort of know who we are in the last 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's to try to show that there's this continuity of action through time where we, as great craftsmen of weapons, dominate people who aren't as good at craftspeople of iron and weaponry. And with a superior attitude, we take, if they have something we want, we take it.
Mm-hmm.
Or we take them.
Well, this has kind of resulted in an ongoing slave nation, hasn't it?
Yes, right. My father heard today somebody talking about the plantation mentality, where we use people as commodities to gain wealth. And but as finding out that the Anglo-Saxons had slavery, had slaves from time immemorial up until around 1100 AD in England, and there's virtually nothing to be found written about it.
Right, right.
But they had whole classes of slaves and laws about slaves, and the church had slaves in England, and, you know, it's nothing new. It just was stopped briefly before it was restarted again on this continent.
Well, in the introduction, you mentioned the great divide between the wealthy, 10%, who control 75% of the wealth, and the majority of Earth's inhabitants. Boy, somebody doesn't want us to have this conversation.
You usually have better reception than that?
Yes, it's usually crystal clear. I think somebody's, I think they're having fun with us. Well, we're going to do this anyway.
Okay.
Why do you think this inequity persists? I mean, is this something that started out in the beginning of time, and those who are in power simply learned how to make it cross-generational?
Well, people tell me all men are that way. You know, they're all fighting and dominating resources, you know. Mm-hmm. But I believe that this continent was peopled with millions who were not living that way, but we discount them. They're not written into our history books. We killed them. They died of the diseases that we brought from living with livestock so closely. And so we don't really hardly have models of other than that to look at, and especially models that we consider credible, because we discount people who don't live that way, sort of. So our way of the bravest warrior with the best weapons gets what he wants has sort of spread out. And my major concern is with what this country is doing.
You know,
and that's what I'm trying to bring focus on. And it's certainly spreading, as the language of English is the language of business internationally. So so the culture is spreading.
Well, yes, and you briefly touched upon the fact that the CIA, with its undercover operations, the black operations, quietly overthrow leaders in other countries who are actually trying to make a positive change for their country.
Yes.
And replaces them with corrupt rulers who can be bribed and controlled.
Yes.
And this largely goes under the wire because these agencies now are so deeply dark that they even have aspects of themselves that they don't even know what the left hand, right hand, or the middle finger is doing anymore.
Right. Yes, they brand these people as communists or socialists or something that we're afraid of, and call them enemies and take them out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's a sad story, and it's especially sad to think that it's originating largely from this country.
Yes.
Even though we know that the people who pull the strings are international and global.
Yes. Right. Yes. I just heard Seymour Hersh talk about a list of people that the Vice President Cheney used to look at. I don't know if it was monthly or weekly or whatever, to review that these people were to be taken out by joint operational command, some kind of secret unit of high-level people that jump into the country and kill them.
Yeah. Well, we've been doing that since the beginning of time, like you said. And look at Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And
yes, right. Why is it that the good guys all go down?
Yeah, they go down. John Lennon.
Yes.
And all of those people who are killed by the one lone gunman.
Yes.
You know, that's just a dead giveaway.
With a hypnotic glaze in his eye.
Yes, exactly. Well, I wonder who put that glaze there.
Yes, right. Yes, must kill, must kill, must kill.
Yes, exactly.
Anyways.
Another thing that you mentioned, because I don't want to dwell on the
negative
too terribly long. I think most people know this stuff by
yeah.
now, and if they don't, they're soon going to find out, I'm sure.
Yes.
But it's important to know the truth because we've become such a materialistic culture, and everything is about consumerism, and we're
right.
sold.
Right.
From the moment we get up, the television is on, and we're being bombarded with messages after messages to do this and do that.
Right.
I guess my question would be, according to your research and your own findings, what is one of the ways through this maze of greed and corruption?
Well, I think that if people could become more aware of their true nature, and through spirituality or whatever, to open the natural love of their hearts and operate more from that position, then everything will be better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so it can't be through cognitive knowledge of a body of facts generally. It's got to be some other greater awakening awareness that awaits people to whatever path they take to come to it. And, and in the book there are different models of people or human beings that show us the way, including Jesus the Christ, as ways of learning to live and love and share and find out that that's the healthy way to be and care about the world in the same manner.
Yes. You mentioned some pretty amazing groups of people that have lived on the planet that are still around today. For instance, the Hopi Indians, the Kogi of South America that I watched a Geographic special on just recently, the Amish and the Ladakh, as well as other natives who are living peacefully.
Yes.
What did you discover about these different indigenous tribes?
Well, they do have a spiritual bonding. They aren't the materialist culture that we are, and they're not devoted to having all they can for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're devoted to higher level things, I would consider, sharing and living peacefully, following those models of living. And the problem sort of is that we have the largest number of church-going people in this country, but it's following a religion that somehow justifies killing, when Jesus was very, very clear on, love your enemy.
Right, right.
And so somehow things got changed around through time, and so they think they're following a spirituality as they have an internal drive to sort of follow, but they're also seduced by really being devoted to material things and wealth and whatever.
Right.
The latest model car.
An element of control through all religions?
Yeah, I guess so, as far as religions go, because they're generally run by sort of bureaucrats that, as Tolstoy says, couldn't really get a job doing much, at least at the station they're at, if they didn't have that bureaucracy. And so, you know, they're sort of insecure about their positions, which I guess leads to the control. But I think that when the Romans structured the Christian church to have control of their people and empire, you know, and it's come down through the English church and, you know, on to us. So, but a lot of people, it seems to me that there's a lot of people who are seeking other paths these days of spirituality that they're finding meaningful. Yeah, so there is hope, you know. It's just not shown on the evening news. Know if I got to
George?
Yes.
You know, I can barely hear you through all this static.
I am sorry. Maybe if I talk straight into the phone. Or you
no,
want to try
I
to make
what it? What I'm going to do is have the station call you and put us on separate lines if they can.
Okay.
Hello, everybody. This is Lance again, and we're back. We had some major technical difficulties with the line, so we're going to continue on. We hope that it has been fixed, and I apologize for that brief or long silence that that we all had to endure. So, George, are you still there with us?
I am. I'm afraid that the problem is out here in the Barry County telephone system or something like that, but...
Well, I don't know. But it seems like it's better.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So let's just go keep going on with the show. And
I'd like to kind of go back to a thing about Viking.
Okay.
You know, National Geographic, in their issue, In Search of Vikings, Somebody went up to Denmark or Norway and was looking at reenactors and talking to them about Viking. And they, you know, say Viking is an action, you know, armed men going out and taking what they want with their weapons. And that a noun form is Vikinger. So a guy who goes Viking is Vikinger. And the action of using military to secure resources is the same action, basically, as far as I'm concerned. And so it's what we have been doing since coming to this continent and discounting the people who live there. And since we had body armor and muskets and steel swords and pikes, you know, we could take from them what they had that we wanted at that time. So, anyways, that's another back into the negative there.
Well, that's pretty much our history, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And people don't understand that we didn't have a written language until 1,000 years ago.
Huh.
And as I look at writings from, you know, like the years of 1500 and 1600, vowels were still interchangeable.
Huh.
And if we spelled the English language with an A instead of an E and it was Anglish, then we might feel a little more connected to the Anglos or, you know, the Angles from Germany than the English, you know, from Britain, you know. The Anglo-Saxons, that connection is just not made, not through public schools or college. It wasn't made for me anyways. So, anyways.
Well,
we are a Viking culture, and
we
discount others who do not make good weapons and hoard wealth. We look at them as childlike, primitive, you know, simpletons or something like that.
Well, isn't that, I think that's how we could probably cite example after example, but as I understand it, the Mayans were taken out by the Spaniards who arrived in ships and stole all their gold.
Yes. Look,
you know,
they had the weapons.
They had the weapons, yeah.
Yes, and an attitude,
yeah,
too. You know, and they certainly weren't exactly Vikings or whatever in the north, but their language isn't what's taking over the world right now. And my interest is what's happening, really, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to throw light on it with the, you know, the historical continuum. But I'd also like to talk about Easter.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
that's a good topic for today.
Yeah, it is, you know. And in Easter being the Anglo-Saxon goddess of spring, you know. And here we are celebrating it, and it really doesn't have a connection with Christianity other than how it was sort of blended together. I'd also like to point out that, and maybe this is a little too early, if a person were to read the autobiography of a yogi, Paramahansa Yogananda's master resurrected 3 months after he was buried and showed himself to his pupil, and his pupil hugged him and felt him as solid.
Wow.
So, you know, the point is that highly developed human beings, you know, this is something that can be done, and it isn't the one and only.
Well, you do mention some of the Hindu teachings and that go back into antiquity, back thousands of years. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because they seem to have a lot of spiritual wisdom and knowledge.
Well, it seems like, yes, that the Vedas are accumulated by many writers over a span of 5,000 years or something like that, their spiritual wisdom. And that area seems to be, that's where Buddha came from.
Right.
Also, so Buddhism, he rose in that tradition. And, you know, I really enjoyed reading Paramahansa Yogananda's work, and his teacher, Sri Yukteswara, who wrote Holy Science around 1899, trying to show the similarity between Christianity And the Hindu, I guess it's Hindu. Hindu is actually a European name given to people who live by some river. But they talk about the cleansing of the heart, you know, and that God is love. And really, you know, what we're talking about is the true nature of human beings and humanity, you know, our divine side, if you want to call it that.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, this is one intelligent universe that we're a part of, and we may have a much higher potential to interact with it, but we have to have a clean heart and mind first before we can interact with the higher intelligences. And the Hindus have demonstrated many different knowledges and abilities through their discipline that they have developed. But there is evidence that Jesus went to India. I mean, in the Bible or the Christian writings, there's a big piece of his life that's missing from the time he comes of age until he comes back
mm-hmm.
to Jerusalem, and they really don't even know who he is.
Huh.
You know, and if he'd been around those towns that whole time, there certainly wouldn't be any question as to who he was. And so, I mean, I do feel that he went down the Silk Road to India
mm-hmm.
and developed with the holy men there himself to his fullest human potential. And
he may have even gone to Tibet and Egypt as well. Who knows?
Yes, yes. There are other stories of that too. Tibet,
yeah.
Definitely. There is a monastery there where there are writings of Saint Isa, the Hebrew saint who came and studied and then went back to his people and was cruelly treated and executed. And so,
yeah.
You know, he came back teaching God his love to the Hebrews, trying to save them from the miseries that they were in. And, you know, all know the story of what happened.
Yes, exactly.
So,
well, you know, he was the one that supposedly overturned the tables on the moneylenders.
Right.
So obviously, if that story is true, he was not favorably inclined towards usury.
Yes.
What do you think he'd think of to us today with our, you know, credit card rates at 35% with late fees and all of the shenanigans that have gone on with homeowners loans and things like that? I don't think he could overturn enough tables today.
Yeah, yes, definitely he would be sad, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over the state of affairs, especially what's happened in his name.
Well,
you know,
obviously if he was killed the first time, in this sophisticated culture that's dominated by wealth, he'd probably be shuffled off quickly to one of the Guantanamo bases.
Right, one of the little secret places.
Yeah, so I don't really think my own gut feeling, my intuition tells me that there's not going to be a second individual that returns, but there may be maybe all of humanity will have Christ consciousness.
Yes, that I think is certainly true over a period of time. That's the
right,
goal.
Right.
But I have also heard that different things about great teachers coming into the state of where money is the real true devotion, that sort of not going to waste their time or something. At this point, he wouldn't be believed.
Right.
Anyways.
Right.
But another interesting thing that science has recently proven is that we can affect with our minds healing through prayer at great distances, and you know we can affect the behavior of creatures and bacteria with our mind, and we can affect fine electrical equipment.
Mm-hmm.
The operation of it with our mind. So,
oh, absolutely.
You know, the human potential is so really unknown to the mechanized culture that we live in because we look for only the mechanized reality. and you know, are sort of taught that we're a result of chemical accidents running downhill through entropy, and what we meet as we come along the way, and this is, so here we are. But actually, they've also discovered that plants can mutate their DNA intelligently in relation to the external environment. So it's not just random accidental. You know, there's so much here in this wonderful mystery.
Oh, yeah.
And we just need to open ourselves up to it and clean ourselves out so we can and pray and meditate or whatever to be part of it
and of course,
enjoy the beauty.
And, of course, that's an inside job, and many people are too busy now trying to survive.
Yes.
And it seems almost that the whole system has been tilted in that direction to keep us constantly off guard and, you know, earning more money so we can buy more things and accumulating a bigger house or whatever it is that we find as appealing on the television or whatever.
Yes. I'm a part of that myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like we can't really escape that.
Yeah, but it is.
But
we don't live in a true human, really human world where people are treated humanly or humanely.
But
if we can't sell ourselves to some technological corporation, we don't have any place to be.
Right, that's right. You mentioned, though, that people are basically good and have an inclination in that direction, and I would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, when you see people that are in, like, for instance, in the New Orleans flood, people just pull together and help each other, and we're always there for one another in disasters.
Yes.
And that tells us that our heart is basically sound. It just may be covered over temporarily with some,
Yeah, and that's one of the things about where we find that they discovered that in World War II that the average infantryman would not take the kill shot. At least these were the findings of General S.L.A. Marshall.
Uh-huh.
Who went into battle. He was from Detroit, and he'd go into battle right after they had occurred and talk to and interview soldiers, and he came to the finding that over half the people would not take the kill shot. And so, you know, the Army found ways to, through operant conditioning and in boot camp, to train people to shoot without thinking. And where we get the post-traumatic stress, where people's consciences come back and torture them for what they've done, you know, being involved in killing, seeing their friends killed. I mean, we're not meant to kill one another.
Absolutely.
And that was one of the signs that I really strongly take for the goodness that we're supposed to be here on Earth, you know.
Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with that. And you also mentioned something about nuclear facilities and nuclear weapons. And
the cost.
You know, the need to move away from that kind of destruction.
Yeah, well, as a cost of our way of war and domination with weaponry. Yeah, I mean, when you're creating things that has a byproduct that has to be kept in controlled conditions for 25,000 years, or you're creating electricity from it, and you know, that's gone in an instant, and then the next how many generations have to take care of the waste?
Well, yeah.
From what you've, that seems ridiculous.
It is, and the thing that I wonder about with that is, do we even have the technology to contain the waste matter for that length of time? I don't know anything. They said that scientists say that everything literally dissolves, all traces of civilization dissolve within 10,000 years. Well, if some of these have a half-life of hundreds of thousands of years, I don't think we have the technology to contain something in a metal or plastic container that's going to last that long.
Yeah.
You know, so we know, it just begs the question, what's going to happen to all of that? There's a lot that's been thrown out to sea and is just laying waste at the bottom of the ocean, you know. getting rusty and just waiting to go off like a time bomb.
Yes.
But then we...
Not a good thing.
You know, it's not a good thing. And
no.
Not a good thing at all.
Not to mention, you know, the other smaller countries who feel, you know, pressured to come up with nuclear weapons themselves.
Yes.
So that they can stand up to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they feel threatened by us, so they, you know, are working to produce them and feel they have every right to, which I guess they do, if we have a right to have them.
Well, you know, the other thing that's disturbing, as long as we're going along this bent, is that, you know, there's such an enormous military-industrial complex that now everything is becoming weaponized, and we want to be the first to do it because, you know, they will get it first. Well, you know, what you're talking about is that we're all one, we're connected in this fabric or web together, and so what we do to someone else, we're really doing to ourselves, aren't we?
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's. I'm afraid that it's not going to stop in a very nice way, you know, but it will stop. You know, because it does, you know, the world is really truly a cooperative place from a microscopic point of view. The rocks are changed into soil by the microbes, and the atmosphere is created in gases from the microbes and the plants. It's only a few of the larger creatures that we see in competition with each other, but they don't really, I mean, they kill their food and eat it, but... It's really a cooperative world, and we're sort of like adolescents living, making a mess and living against the rules of our parents. And, you know, Yogananda or Paramahansa says that no nation or people can stand long against going against the rules of the universe. You know?
Yeah, that's wise.
So... I don't know how it's all going to come down or what's going to happen, but...
Well, are you familiar at all with the Mayan calendar?
Well, I hear a lot about that, yes, and I see a lot about it on the web. I know I'm kind of getting ready myself for what might happen during the 2012 or 2013 situation.
Yeah.
I don't know...
It just seems natural that there are so many things... happening simultaneously, running out of resources and the population growth and so many other things, the use of chemicals in the skies. I thought it was kind of funny that one of the president's advisors was suggesting shooting micro pulverized metals to reflect the sun. Well, they've been doing that for decades now under the guise of chemtrails, but nobody has actually admitted that they're doing this. So I suppose what they're doing is setting us up for, you know, well, we're going to have to start this program now and then just hope that everybody just forgets that it's been going on for decades.
Is that our current president?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And another of his ideas was something about... causing a volcano to go off and create a dark cloud around the planet.
What?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the possibilities that they came up with. You know, because when volcanoes go off, there's silt that goes into the air, and it literally darkens the whole planet. Well, the problem there is that life requires sunlight.
Yeah, right.
I try to
mess with that kind of balance of things.
But, you know, it's unfortunate that people in positions of power are able to do those things surreptitiously without the consent or knowledge of the uninformed masses.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
basically, I think our country is too large to operate as a democracy.
Yeah.
You know, and the decisions are being made way too far away from the people that they're affecting. And so...
Yeah.
We don't really know what's going on over there. They just take our money and, you know, they do what they tell us what's best. But we don't really know. We can only kind of guess.
Yeah, that's right.
But I want people to have hope. You know, we can dwell on what's kind of, it's been going on for a long time.
Right, right.
And it's just sort of a cycle of affairs. And I want people to have hope. And, you know, my own, I tried to stay out of my own spiritual beliefs in this book to try not to alienate people, you
yeah,
know. But
yeah.
I do believe that, you know, we're going to live many lifetimes, and it's all about learning. And so you can have hope that it's going to be getting better.
Well, I agree with you, and I like the approach you took with the various spiritual teachings, because you didn't really emphasize any over any others, but
no.
You kind of highlighted each one, and they all seem to have a core essence to them, of which is based on love and the interconnection of all that is.
Yes,
and the need to open our hearts and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And we've heard this stuff over and over, but it really is necessary for us to reach a higher level. And
yes.
You did mention something that might be fun to talk about briefly, and that was Lynn Taggart's research on the field.
Yes.
What
yes.
did you find on her research?
Oh, my God. She's written a second book, which I've started reading, but it's so heavy. But, you know, she's found so many, or brought so many things to light. Well, some of the things I already mentioned about the studies of prayer affecting healing. It didn't matter what God or who you prayed to, it was more the intention.
Right.
And it was able to affect healing over distances. And the things about the zero-point energy field, well, I'd like to touch briefly on, and hopefully not get lost, that they've recently discovered, you know, what they call dark matter and dark energy with the Hubble telescope. What they found is that what we can see in the universe is really only like a third of what exists.
Right, right.
So if we start there, there are two-thirds of the universe that we can't see with our eyes that
right.
exists. And it's holding the galaxies together as they move through space and they spin. Otherwise, they would spin apart. And, you know, and it's also putting energy into the system, which is accelerating in its expansion rather than slowing down naturally. So there's a lot going on invisibly that science is now starting to see. And the zero-point energy field is another sort of aspect of that, where they found that, you know, electrons sort of that are associated with each other remember each other across
yes.
great distances.
Yeah.
You know, and immediately, I think that's really the basis of electricity, the electrons trying to get back where they came from when they were shook loose in the spinning magnet.
Yeah.
But
Tesla did a lot of work on that area.
What's that?
Nikola Tesla.
Tesla, yes.
He did a lot of work on that, and in fact, it's conceivable. He claims to have discovered, you know, energy that it is transmitted through the air. I mean,
yes, right. I have read that also. That
yeah.
A way that it could be picked up with an antenna, but then they wouldn't be able to charge or meter it. So,
well, that's probably why we don't have
a problem for the people making a profit on it.
Exactly.
But the zero-point energy field seems to molecules and atoms. And they're getting their energy to move from, they think, what they call the zero-point energy field.
Uh-huh.
And they're moving in and out of visible existence. I mean, it's just, there's so much on the zero-point energy field that, and I'm really, I haven't studied up on it for a while to know, but information seems to move through it. And we seem to get information back from it, and
right, right.
sort of like our brains are actually receivers and transmitters rather than like a DVD that's getting information burnt onto it.
Right, right.
We're working. Our brains are working with the energy field.
Yep.
And it's through those distances that our thoughts travel through the zero-point energy field. That's one of their theories about. lot of the things that Jesus was showing people were one of the things, but, you know, using the prayer to heal or the intention to heal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's just so much potential we have as human beings if we can get our heart and mind in the right alignment to use them. And if we're only centering our thoughts on acquiring and controlling and selfish things, then we're not going to access the larger knowledges and greater forces or whatever. So our whole culture sort of keeps us away from that. You know?
Yes, and it almost seems that we need, well, it seems that there are a lot more people that are snapping out of their dreamlike state, and some people say that that will create a tipping point or a 100th monkey theory event in which everybody will have the same information at some point.
So I hope so.
I do, too. I do, too. I mean, it doesn't look that way today.
Also, I've just been reading his book, The Kingdom of God is Within You, and he was thinking that was coming in 1899.
Huh.
You know, people's consciences were telling them that their behaviors weren't right.
Yeah.
You know? And he was thinking that that growth of conscience was going to change public opinion, sort of, which was what he thought sort of shaped people's ways of acting, you know, and which is sort of cultural norms. And he was thinking that that was going to happen, but that was 100 years ago or more, I guess. So, well, I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I got to say that you know, I watch Yahoo News, and there was a story on there about Tibetan monks that were telling tourists that there was going to be nuclear war about 2012.
Huh.
And that there was going to be extraterrestrial
yes.
intervention because we didn't have the right to tear up things as much as we were going to.
Yes, I read that, too. I thought that was an interesting take.
Yeah, I kept a copy of that. You know, that was they were saying it was through remote viewing.
Yeah,
that they had that knowledge, which is something that Lynn Taggart sort of talks about in a sense of viewing things at a distance through somebody you're emotionally connected with, eyes, knowing what's going on.
So, what are some of the methods that you have found valuable in getting touch with our authentic selves and with our hearts and our intuition?
Well, I guess that following your intuition would be one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to say. I started transcendental meditation in 1971 or something like that, but haven't been able to devote enough time to it to float around the room or anything. But certainly, for me, reading, finding sources to read that strike the bell of truth within you, you know, and, I mean, I love Jesus, so I like reading his words, but the rest of the Bible doesn't do a lot for me, and, you know, being in nature also, I live in the country, in the woods, where it's peaceful and there's, you know, creatures. I mean, just opening your heart to the world. I mean, I think that, for me, things happened during the late 60s that started opening me up, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You might say. And, and set me on the path. But just trying to be as loving a person as possible, which is what Jesus taught us to do. And the Unity Church also, or the Unity School of Christianity, which is everywhere just about, they, you know, embrace quietly reincarnation and a lot of Eastern thought, and their message on Easter is the Christ in you is arisen, you know. So there's just so many paths around, but it's really hard living and having a television set and living as I'm a high school teacher, so I'm watching young people act out at school, you know, the roles that they're learning.
Right.
And you know, and it's it is teacher, I can make my place a lot freer, although I have to take attendance and that kind of thing, you know, as to what we do and how we, you know, grade or evaluate and all that kind of stuff. And they kind of leave me alone. So
that's good.
You know, it's a struggle. If I could just live with a loving group of people and develop that way, everything would be easier.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you have some good friends you can connect with and talk with and enjoy, and my wife and I are both on a growing path and enjoy reading things. And, you know, it's just, there's so much around. I'd also like to say the Internet, you know, has been such a source for me in the last few years of information. You know, it's opened up to people's homes so much more than any library ever could.
Oh, yeah.
Any one library, although you have to be careful there. But there's just so much information that's available now to the common man. So...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things that you mentioned that I agree with, and I think it's that we forget and, you know, don't fully comprehend in this veiled state that we're in, is that we're souls that existed before we were born, and we will exist after we pass on into the next realm.
Yes.
And so, you know, there's continuity there, and in a sense, I guess Earth is kind of a place to learn lessons and to experience.
Right. Absolutely.
So, but we've had 4.5 billion years of experiencing wars and negativity and green corruption.
That's what our history tells us. Now, that's living maybe in the culture that we are come from, but there may have been other cultures
who
did not exist in that reality.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know. In smaller groups of people.
Absolutely.
We have to realize that and try to seek those, but we ran over most of them when we came to this continent, and they died before we even got there from diseases caught from fishermen and things like that. So
that's right. And I think the only reason that the Kogi survived is because they established themselves so far up into the mountains.
Right.
And they didn't allow anybody to transgress their space, but... from the documentary that I watched, it looked like there was building at the, you know, modern building going on not too terribly far from where they've lived for thousands of years.
Yes.
So, you know, modernization is creeping in everywhere. And,
yes.
You know, of course, the rainforests are dissipating. And
right.
All of these things are going to be coming to a head before we know it.
Yes.
So I think it's time for us to start paying attention.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
You know,
and
getting our own houses in order.
Yes, that's right. I agree completely. Yep.
So we have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that, you know, that people can find your book, because I think everybody should buy it.
Well,
I want everybody to get a copy. So would you tell people where they can find your book and your website?
Yeah. It's thistribeofmind.com all together. And they can also get the book at amazon.com. But thistribeofmind.com, you can get it directly from me. I'd be glad to sign you one, whatever. And there's information about it. The book's really, I hope, it has a lot of different resources and people can take and study more. It's hopefully, you know, can lead people on more further paths, and it's where I've come up to at this point. But thistribeofmind.com, and it's really, you know, in going to bookstores with this book, you know, I've got half of it's the dark history, basically, of our culture, and the other half is showing models of how we could be, and examples and evidence as I see it on how human beings should be. So it's got elements of religion, spirituality, and history, and it just doesn't fit into any category. You know, it's like...
Well, it's a great read.
What shelf should it go on? You know, we have all these cubicles, and I thank you.
What's your website address?
Thistribeofmind.com.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yep, same as the book. Just, you know, I I'm trying to show people that we're part of a continuum, you know, we're part of a history. Most of our history was forgotten before we learned to write, but it goes on every day, and we're part of it, and we take it forward into the next day.
Absolutely.
And, it's not just waking up and creating ourselves anew with the newest trend or gizmo or something like that. So.
Well, George, we have made it through the show.
Well, thank you. I hope we had a little better connection there.
Well, it was a little better, and I apologize to all the listeners for that blank spot. I don't know what happened to the phone lines, but for whatever reason, they were acting up, and sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
And thank all of you who stayed with us. And I want to thank you, George, and wish you the best of luck with your book, because it is an excellent book, and it's well worth the read.
Well, I thank you very much, Lance.
Okay.
I really appreciate that.
And thank you for being on the show.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right.
All righty.
Good night, George, and good night, everybody.